Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
It's good to be diving into the archive again.
Today, we're opening the collection to focus on something, well, truly central to Kurdish culture and identity, the powerful tradition of the Dengbej in the Afrin region.
Mm-hmm. It's a tradition that really acts as a living library, doesn't it? Preserving history and culture in ways that, you know, written records sometimes can.
Especially in places where language and identity have faced significant challenges.
Exactly.
So we've pulled together a collection of research materials, notes, articles, that sort of thing, that explore these incredible voice tellers or voice singers, specifically from Afrin. That's the region its Kurdish inhabitants often call Saye Kermek.
Yeah, and what we want to do really is pull out the most significant insights from this material, try to understand who the Dengbej were, what their role was in the community.
And why their art is so important, especially when you think about Afrin's history and, well, the immense difficulties it's faced recently.
There's such a unique power in history passed down just through the voice, isn't there?
Definitely. This is a region with a deep, layered past, and these voices have essentially been the keepers of that heritage, making sure it wasn't lost.
So, to really get a handle on the Dengbej of Afrin, we probably need to start with the place itself. Afrin, but maybe more importantly, Saye Kermek, the Kurdish mountain, as his people call it.
Right. And the descriptions we found in the research, they paint a really vivid picture. It's known as the most densely Kurdish populated part of Syria, famous for its olive groves, fertile land.
And the names themselves are significant. Afrin. Its Kurdish roots seem linked to ideas of creation, water, fertility.
While Saye Kermek,
that explicitly grounds the land in the identity of the Kurdish people, the Kermek who live there. It's a powerful statement.
The history is just so deep. The material points to this continuous Kurdish presence centuries back. You see names like Kurdika in Greek and Roman times.
Djebel Alakrad from Arab chroniclers, Kurdaya in the Ottoman era. It's layer upon layer.
And this connection, this long history, it's not just trivia, is it? The sources suggest the land itself is woven into the art.
Absolutely. The descriptions of Afrin's beauty, those olive groves, the red soil, the water, it feels like these must have been sources of imagery, themes for the local Dengbej.
Which makes the recent reports of environmental damage, like felling olive trees.
Yeah.
It makes it feel like more than just economic loss.
Oh, completely. It's like wounding the source of inspiration, the cultural landscape itself.
Yeah.
And that insistence on using Saye Kermek, it carries real weight. It's an assertion of identity, of belonging. It connects the Dengbej tradition to this narrative of continuous presence.
Which is especially poignant, you know, given what the materials document about recent efforts to change the region's demographics and cultural fabric.
Exactly. Using that name becomes, in a way, an act of cultural assertion in itself.
So that's the setting. A land deeply connected to its people and their art. With that picture, let's try to understand who these Dengbej actually were. What does the name itself tell us?
Well, the name is quite revealing. It comes from the Kurdish words deng, meaning voice, and bej, which means to tell or to sing.
So voice tellers or voice singers.
Pretty much. They're the bards, the poets, the storytellers.
And their role was, well, absolutely crucial, wasn't it? Especially in a society where formal education, written Kurdish, was often restricted or even suppressed.
Precisely. They were like living archives. They held the community's memory, its traditions, myths, histories, all that oral literature.
Indispensable, really, for passing down the collective story, the identity, from one generation to the next, especially when written records weren't there or weren't allowed.
And their repertoire, according to the research, was just vast. They could memorize hundreds of lengthy tales, epic poems about love, war, heroism.
Wow.
And there were specific forms, too. The sources mentioned strand songs of mourning, laments, and kelim, which seemed to be more like spontaneous recitations or chants.
A key thing mentions that they often performed unaccompanied, right? A cappella.
Yes. That's a defining characteristic noted. It allowed for more improvisation, maybe, and created this very direct, powerful connection with the audience. Just the voice.
You can easily see why they were called the historians of society. They were voicing collective experiences, keeping that identity strong against policies aimed at assimilation.
It's true. But there's a flip side. While relying on memory made the tradition incredibly resilient, you can't just burn a memory.
Right.
It does make comprehensive documentation quite difficult today. The sources list many names, but finding detailed biographies or recordings of their entire repertoire isn't always easy.
That vulnerability comes through in the materials. Without dedicated archival efforts, some of this cultural wealth is just hard to capture fully. It highlights the importance of the work people are doing now to document it.
Yeah, it makes you think, doesn't it? About your own family stories, maybe, or local histories. How are they passed down? What gets lost if those spoken traditions fade? It really underscores the stakes.
So these voice tellers carried history in their minds. What was their world like? Let's talk about the context, the social historical context of Dengbeji.
Okay. Well, the tradition was deeply, deeply woven into Kurdish life. The research talks about an apprenticeship system.
Ah, like learning a craft.
Exactly. Aspiring Dengbej would spend years studying under established masters. Intense memorization, learning performance techniques. A real commitment.
And historically, they often had patrons, like emirs, chiefs.
Yes, often supported by influential figures, families. Their performances were central to gatherings, especially during those long winter nights, providing entertainment, but also cultural transmission. And interestingly, the songs could carry subtle political messages through allusions to current events.
That it wasn't always easy. The materials really emphasized the pressure they faced.
Immense pressure, especially in modern history, countries like Turkey, Syria. There were periods of intense repression targeting Kurdish language and culture.
Which led to bans.
Bans on public performance, yeah. So the tradition often had to go underground. Clandestine cassette recordings became absolutely vital then for both preserving and sharing the music.
It's fascinating, though, that oral nature, while making documentation hard, also gave it strength. Like you said, you can't easily erase a song someone holds in their memory.
That's its resilience. In more recent times, there have been efforts to actively support Dengbeji. The research mentions Mala Dengbejan.
Dengbej houses.
Right. Established in places like Diyarbakir, Vanday, sometimes with help from cultural groups, even the EU, apparently, creating spaces to perform, teach, archive.
And there were earlier documentation efforts, too, like Roger Lescott during the French Mandate.
Yes. Figures like him played a role.
Mm-hmm.
But the tradition also became, well, increasingly politicized. The sources point out how the music often became a really significant marker of Kurdish identity, even nationalism, especially as a response to repression.
And that feels particularly relevant for Afrin, right, with its strong identity and history of struggle.
Absolutely. It meant Dengbej they were crucial for reinforcing that identity. But it also, unfortunately, made them targets.
You see that so clearly with someone like Semil Horo. The research mentions he was actually imprisoned just for lighting Anura's fire.
Purely cultural act. Treated as a political crime. It shows the pressure.
And Afrin itself is consistently highlighted as a key heartland for Dengbeji. The sources suggest that the relative preservation of language and folklore there created fertile ground for the art form.
Yeah, there's even a mention of possible shared cultural traits with areas like Marash and Elbistan, hinting at older connections, maybe.
But interestingly, while places like Diyarbakir had these formal Dengbej houses, the materials we looked at don't specifically mention a similar formal institution in Afrin before the recent conflicts.
No, not explicitly. And given the documented destruction of cultural infrastructure in Afrin after 2018... Well, it seems highly likely that any such places, formal or informal gathering spots for artists, would have been severely impacted.
Which just makes systematic preservation efforts even harder today. Okay, so with that backdrop of history, resilience, and recent challenges, who were some of the key voices? Let's talk about some of the individual Dengbej from Xie Corment mentioned in the collection.
Right. The research paints a picture of a really vibrant community. It wasn't just isolated individuals. There was this strong sense of connection. Master-apprentice relationships were vital.
Like Adik Nakar learning from Abram A. Turco and Hemush Korek.
Exactly. And they collaborated constantly. Adik Nakar often performed with Semil Horo, but also with others like Riste Memkukane, Omer H. Emlo. This network suggests, you know, an active exchange, maybe even the development of a distinct Afrin style.
And when that community gets disrupted,
that collaborative creation gets fragmented, too. It's also interesting that many Dengbej had other professions.
Yeah.
Semil Horo was a carpenter, ran a cafe. Aydik Nakar was a skilled woodcarver. Their art wasn't separate from life. It was embedded in it. Their experiences likely fed into their stories.
The materials consistently name a core group of respected Dengbej from Afrin. The level of detail varies, but their names are clearly central to the region's cultural memory.
Semil Horo really stands out as an emblematic figure. Born 1934... died in 1989, described as having this powerful mountainous voice recognized across Kurdistan.
And his cafe in Aleppo, Kuwaya Semilhoro, it wasn't just a cafe, was it? It became a cultural hub.
Seems so. His life wasn't easy, though. Personal tragedies, but also political persecution because of his identity and affiliations.
The research mentioned arrests, beatings. That specific example of being in prison for 80 days in 1958 just for lighting a new rose fire.
Yeah, it's stark. That pressure led to periods of exile in Turkey and Iraq before he could return to Syria after 1970.
And that's when his career really took off locally. First cassette in 65.
Featuring classic pieces like Meme Allen, Ayşe İbe. And he collaborated widely, even with famous singers like Ayşe Şan in Turkey. Later on, his work took on more explicitly national themes.
Songs for leaders, anthems, connecting to that resistance narrative we talked about.
Right. He was prominent at festivals, cultural events. And that collaboration with Adik Nikar on the tambur was apparently quite significant.
His legacy feels huge. A massive contribution to the Kurdish song archive, a real symbol for Syrian Kurdistan's Dengbej tradition. And his son, Eli Semilhoro, carries on his music.
It's wonderful that the lineage continues. Semilhoro himself is buried in Afrin.
Then there's Adik Nikar. A legendary figure, especially with the tambur, lived an incredibly long life, 100 years, 1907 to 2007.
Amazing, isn't it? Born into an Ezidi family that's an important religious minority in the region. He was also a skilled woodcarver. The sources say he made his own unique tambours, 16 frets, and played with his fingers, not a pick.
Wow. And he learned from the greats, too, like Ibrahim Etirko, inherited technique and songs, but also passed it on, mentoring others like Bave Sela.
From the 1930s onwards, he was apparently just central to Afrin's musical life, crucial in preserving traditional and epic songs through performing and teaching.
He earned some impressive titles, Bilbiye Şiay Kumenk, the Nightingale of the Kurdish Mountain.
And Mire Tembure, the Prince of Timber, high praise.
He collaborated widely, famously accompanying Semilhoro. His talent was recognized beyond Afrin, too, awards in places like Sulamania. His legacy seems to be about that unique style, preservation, and influence.
Definitely. Then you have İbrahim Besni, or İbrahim Etirko. He's presented as a really foundational figure for the whole Afrin Dengbej school.
The name Türko refers to his family origins in Besni, Turkey. They migrated over.
Yeah, mid-19th century, according to the sources. He and his contemporary Şeyh Simak were apparently the big names of their era in Afrin. His influence is huge because so many later Dengbejhoro, Nikar, Hibus Korik, Semile Kure followed his school, learned from him.
He turned stories into kilam, the chants.
Exactly. Adik Nikar specifically learned songs from him. And the tradition ran in the family. His daughter Gulo was a Dengbej, and she was the mother of Bave Sela, so a really seminal role.
What about Ali Tiko, also known as Abu Ali?
Another important voice, 1930 to 2012. The research has less detail on him compared to Horo or Nikar, but he's clearly recognized.
He released an album, LA4 Kirkuk, in 91. And it's interesting, his music is still circulating, even on TikTok and YouTube now. He also worked with Adik Nikar.
Yeah, the persistence of the music is striking. And the sources list others, too, acknowledging that info varies. Names like Hemuş Kurik.
Who taught Adik Nikar?
But Timile Kerry from İbrahim Etirko School, Omari Şemlo, Efde Şire, His Nazi, who apparently has recordings online, Reside Memkukene, Beytaz, Elieka Bey.
It's important to list them, even if the details are sparse. It shows this rich community, not just a couple of stars.
Absolutely. A whole tapestry.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Rojbosh, Hannah.
Rojbosh, Hannah. Ah, brilliant timing. Just what we needed.
How's the chai today? Is it good? Sometimes it needs a bit more sugar, you know.
Let's see. No, this is lovely today. Really smooth, actually. Not bitter at all. Perfect. Good, good. All right. Let's just take a quick moment then. Enjoy this lovely chai. And then we'll get back into the themes, the actual stories these amazing voices were telling. Short pause implied. Okay, feeling refreshed. Let's get back to the material. We've talked about the place, the role, the people. What about the actual songs? What themes echo through the work of the Afrin Dengbej? Well, the research describes their songs as really reflecting the whole spectrum of Kurdish life, history, emotion. Themes range from geography, local history, contemporary events, right down to lullabies and love songs.
And those the laments seem particularly key.
Yes, definitely highlighted. They often tell these lengthy epic tales, not just about love and war, but also weaving in descriptions of natural beauty, the landscape, and deep expressions of sorrow over loss.
Semilhoro's work seems like a good example of that breath.
It really is. He performed classic epics like Meme Allen, but also those really poignant love songs and laments, Ayşe İbe, Zemey Zalim, and regional stories like Sebili.
And crucially, That strong national consciousness we mentioned. Songs for leaders, anthems like Kiss a Curtain New Rose, Peshmerga Kurd.
Which connects directly back to Afrin's history, right? That assertion of identity, the struggles. His songs helped build that collective feeling, that resilience.
And Adik Nakar, the timber master, his role was key in preserving those epics musically.
Absolutely. His repertoire included classics like Isha A, Devisa Ebdi, Siamende Silavi. The sources give the example of Exilsi Mehemed.
The Lament for the Nephew.
Yeah, performed by Horo with Nakar's timbre playing a crucial part. It's described as this incredibly moving song about personal grief, the loss of a young relative and friend, but voiced in a way that resonated with the whole community's sense of loss and sorrow.
That link between personal and communal feeling seems really strong.
It does. Now, while the sources don't give a huge amount of direct analysis of older songs, focusing specifically on Afrin's unique landscape, the constant use of the name Chiayi Kermek itself ties the narratives inherently to that mountain setting.
And you see echoes in contemporary artists from Afrin, right? The research mentioned Juan Hassan, the voice of Chiayi Kermek.
Yes, blending folklore with themes of resistance, nostalgia for the homeland, the pain of displacement themes that feel very current but likely have older roots.
And the poet Naza Jadan saying, Afrin lives in every text I write. That connection to the city, the green memory, is powerful.
It suggests a real continuity. Themes like longing for homeland, displacement. These probably have deep historical roots in earlier cycles of conflict and persecution in the region.
And the large-scale displacement since 2018 just gives those themes an even heavier weight and urgency.
Definitely. It makes you reflect. How does the place you come from, its history, its landscape, show up in your own art or music or writing? How does that connection manifest?
Yeah. Now, we have to confront the really profound challenges this tradition has faced, especially recently. Let's talk about that resilience amidst adversity.
It's a tough part of the story. The tradition has faced just immense difficulties. Recent conflict, mass displacement, and deliberate cultural suppression.
The Turkish-led offensive in January 2018, the subsequent occupation by Turkey and allied militias. That seems to be a major turning point discussed in the materials.
A devastating one. It led to the forced displacement of, estimates say, up to 300,000 people.
And the research reports systematic atrocities against the Kurds who remain or tried to return, arrests, torture, looting, killings. It paints a grim picture.
It does. And it mentions policies explicitly aimed at changing the demography, settling non-Kurds in the homes of the displaced Kurds.
The sources even cite statements by Turkey's President Erdogan about returning Afrin to original owners and his documented false claims about the Kurdish majority there as reflecting this intent.
Clearly, those kinds of conditions, violence, displacement, demographic engineering, make it incredibly hard for a tradition like Dengbeji to flourish. It needs stability, community, freedom of expression, generational transmission. All disrupted.
And when people are displaced to Shaba, Aleppo, the diaspora, the tradition itself changes, doesn't it?
It has to. What was rooted in Afrin's landscape evolves. It becomes diasporic expression. Themes of longing, remembrance, the trauma of exile come to the fore. Performance contexts shift. New meanings emerge.
And alongside the physical displacement, there's the cultural suppression mentioned.
Yes. Documented destruction of cultural heritage sites. Mm. Kurdish street names reportedly changed to Arabic or Turkish. The Kurdish language marginalized in schools.
And Nuraz banned again, echoing Smilharo's imprisonment decades earlier for the same thing.
It makes practicing traditions gathering, singing in Kurdish, incredibly difficult, potentially dangerous. The death of the contemporary artist Juan Hassan, the voice of Chiayi Kermek, is seen by many as symbolic of this silencing.
This systematic approach, hitting tangible sites, intangible language and celebrations, it's described as a strategy to alter the cultural landscape, diminish Kurdish identity.
Which makes preserving memory-based traditions like Dengbeji even more critical, but also much harder.
So what's the current state? Are there preservation efforts?
Well, as of early 2025, the reports mentioned suggest some increase in Kurds returning to Afrin, but the challenges are still huge. Property rights, security, education. Major issues remain.
But efforts persist. Individuals, the diaspora.
Yes. People like the poet Naza Jadan keeping Afrin alive in writing. Sons of Dengbej, like Eli Similhoro, continuing to perform. And digital preservation is playing a role online archives, trying to document names, biographies, recordings.
But those returns, even if happening, are complex.
Very complex. The altered demographics, armed groups still present, the trauma, the insecurity. even for those who return, the environment for practicing and receiving these traditions has fundamentally changed.
Yet, in all this difficulty, displacement, loss, suppression, the memory, the songs, they take on even more weight, don't they?
Absolutely. They become powerful symbols of Afrini identity, of resilience. For the displaced, these narratives offer solidarity, a connection to homeland, a testament to their heritage.
So the tradition isn't just history, it's an active part of asserting identity, resisting erasure right now.
Exactly. Makes you think, doesn't it? How does cultural expression become such a vital anchor for people facing displacement or profound hardship? What power does it hold?
So wrapping this up, the Dengdej of Afrin, of Siyekirmenk, they are just such vital carriers of Kurdish history, culture, identity through their art.
Mm-hmm. And their resilience. Despite everything, repression, conflict, displacement, it's a powerful testament to the strength of that oral tradition.
The legacy of figures like Semil Horo, Adik Nakar, Ibrahim Besni, Ili Tiko, and all the others we mentioned, it clearly continues to inspire. It lives on through their descendants, through the community.
And looking into them, exploring these research materials like we've done today, it feels like an act of cultural preservation in itself, a way to counter narratives that seek to erase that history and presence.
Absolutely. Though we have to acknowledge the limits. The sources give us a foundation, but they also make it clear that more in-depth research is really needed.
Yeah, proper ethnographic work, archival efforts where possible, to fully document the lives, the repertoires, the styles of so many of these artists. There's still so much potentially recoverable.
And looking forward, the revitalization of this tradition, it needs more than just peace, doesn't it? It needs an environment where Kurdish culture is actually respected, supported.
Where people can return safely, with dignity, where artists can practice freely, without fear. That's the real foundation.
The materials we looked at highlight that struggle documenting oral traditions under duress is hard, but they also point to digital archives, individual efforts as lifelines, which leaves us with the final thought, really, for you, the listener.
In today's world, information spreads instantly, globally. But it can also be buried, deleted just as fast. So how can purely oral, memory-based traditions like Dengbeje truly be secured for the future? Is it just technology? Or is it about creating the conditions, the freedom, for them to flourish again back in their homeland? What does real preservation look like?
Something to think about. Thank you for joining us today in the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.